Erlem Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello and welcome again to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And we love you, our loyal listeners, because it's you who every single week provide us with the fodder, the thoughts, and the focus of our weekly sporting debates. And the votes have counted. They've been analysed and they have been dissected. And there is a runaway winner this week. We are going to be analysing an all-time non-top tier rugby union 15 from the international sphere. And I'm really excited for this because I'm a big believer that the global game of rugby, whilst it's improving, needs to do ever more. And we're going to shine a light on some all-time stars. And I tell you what, if these had been in a conglomerate of a team, they could well have been a World Cup team. Some real stars that we're going to bring to you. But always, it's your show. Every single bit, as much as it is ours. And I know, in terms of your all-time top 15 outside of the big eight, you're going to be awash with opinions. Continue to tweet us at Verulam Sport. Love to hear you and your thoughts. And what names in this stellar 15 have we not considered? Who's fallen through the gaps? Who have we not extended out into our net? Get involved. Tweet at Verulam Sport. And in order to do this analysis today of an all-time rugby union 15 international team from outside of the top tier in that rugby union world, we've enlisted the voice of the OAs, the ever erudite, one of the finest scholars of the game of rugby union that I know. He is a legend, truly he is. It's an honour to welcome back to Verulam Sport Podcasting, Mr. Brian Quinn. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, Tony. Thanks very much. But after that, my head probably won't let me get through the door. Thank you for the intro.
Hey, Brian, you're a top man, as you well know. And I'm really rather looking forward to this, breaking down our all-time non-top-tier international rugby team and so many great names. And I will say, I'm going to close the Pandora's box almost instantaneously, but I'll tell you what would be another interesting topic for debate, maybe for another day. An all-time top international tier 15 from a diaspora. Players like, for instance, just off the top of my head, a Jonah Lomo, the Vinapala brothers, who apply their trade for a international team in that top eight, who really owe their heritage and their upbringing to teams that we are going to bring to the table today. I think that'll be a fascinating chat, but I'm drawing a line before we embark upon that. But yeah, I'm excited for today. But Brian, you are, of course, the voice of the OAs. And just before we go international, I want to keep it Hertfordshire for a moment. I've got to tell you, it was great this week to chat to Dan George, head coach, new head coach of the OAs, from another wonderful rugby heritage, a team in the top eight, so we couldn't pick from their players today. Wales, I'm talking about. But I really liked his attitude. Obviously, it's terribly early days. We can't make any firm analysis. But I've got to tell you, I loved his approach and his vision. And his idea of culture. I guess your initial take on Dan and your thoughts ahead of this OA's return in what's been a very strange, protracted end to the season.
Well, I look at his culture and his history. He was with Oaklands for long enough. He was with Chinner, of course, who are a top quality side at our level and above our level. We're looking forward to that. He talks a great fight. It remains to see how that translates onto the pitch. I know he's got the dressing room at this very early stage. And I've heard nothing but good about him. And I've enjoyed talking to him myself.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And obviously, we're looking to build the OAs. They were inconsistent, but so many losing bonus points, meaning that you were really in contention, even against some of the real top players in the league. It's got to become now, I think, this season, a time for these young men to really grow up and kind of force on, because it's one thing to be in contention. It's another thing to seal the deal. And I guess that's the challenge that certainly Dan is charged with finding the answer to this campaign.
Yes, Tony, they haven't enforced rest, so the players will be hungry to get on with it. That's the same with every club, of course. But we have a position to uphold. We're at level four. We are happy with our position there, and we look to improve certainly within that level four and to see where else we go.
Yeah, absolutely. We always love following the OAs. And of course, Brian, you are our voice of the OAs. And we look forward to hearing from them and from you throughout their campaign as it gets underway. But right now, it's time to get underway with our particular choices from a non-top tier rugby union 15 internationally all time. To the uninitiated, what we mean by the non-top tier. And as I say, I think there's a case to be made that so many international greats should have been featuring for nations that we're going to consider today. But that's another conversation for another day. We cannot, of course, consider the big three from the Southern Hemisphere, South Africa, New Zealand and Australia. I think worrying times for Australia rugby union-wise, but again, maybe a chat for another time. Those three nations have claimed 8 out of the 9 Rugby World Cups. We're not allowed either to consider the traditional 5 nations from the European perspective. England, of course, the only Northern Hemisphere winner of the Rugby World Cup in that glorious occasion back in 2003. Brian, Queen's Island also can't be considered. The great Welsh team, who were so many greats all time, and also no Scots in our 15. And of course, the wonderful culture of rugby that is the ever mercurial French. They are the big 8. We can't consider those players, but it leaves a global, a world of opportunity to consider. And I'm going to kick things off focusing in on the 15 and the wingers, fullback and the wingers, the back of the backs, as it were. And my 15 is a 2007 nominated World Player of the Year, 2006 International Rugby's Fullback of the Year, one of the most elegant players I've ever had the privilege of watching, Juan Martin Hernandez from Argentina, 74 caps, 176 points. He graced the game across Europe, doing wonderful things at Stade Francais. We talk about diaspora. You can't fault international players of this class earning a great living, finding great opportunities for themselves and their families in the bigger nations. But he was always true to Argentina. And I tell you what a player, so elegant. On his day, he just glided. I picked him at 15. I know he played at 10 in a few World Cups. But for me, a natural fullback. Sometimes a little lackadaisical under the high ball. But just going forward, we talk grace. We talk pace. And he had an eye for the gap. A wonderful ability to chase his own kind of grubber kicks. Predator as well, and that 176 points will indicate that. Not the world's greatest place kicker, but on his day he could certainly show composure there. But just a really all-round great rugby player. As I say, it was only international rugby's second all-time top scorer, the world-class Brian Habana, which prevented him being 2007 international rugby's Player of the Year. Hernandez is my fullback. Very quickly, before I bring on my two out of the land of the rising sun wingers, your thoughts quickly, Brian, on Hernandez.
Yes, silky smooth skills. It was wonderful to watch him, but he had a tackle like an express train as well. So a great man to have at your back.
Yeah, absolutely, in such a crucial position. As I mentioned, I'm going now into my two wingers. Loads of talents that we could have brought in here, but I've just been focused in on that land of the rising sun, Japan, a rugby nation on the rise. I think if we manage them well, and I'd say we, not the royal we, I'm talking about international rugby, and give them the chance to compete against the bigger top tier nations more regularly. We remember, of course, they're wonderfully organised, their wonderful World Cup, just recently, and so many greats. But my two wingers come from Japan. I've gone for Daisuke Ohata. Apologies to Japanese listeners. That was poorly pronounced, I'm sure. But he had to be in because he is the all-time top try scorer in international rugby union history, with a remarkable try-to-game ratio of 69 tries in 58 games. We talk about predators. Well, that man right there is your shark, your uber predator. 69 tries, 58 games. I've got to repeat that record. I mean, I know that the cynics will say that only a quarter of his tries came against the quote-unquote top-tier nations. But the thing is, Brian, like I mentioned, Japan, until very recently, haven't been given the opportunity. I know there were the great tours that the balladeer Max Boyce eulogized about from way back when. But really, it's only now, given their exploits in the last two World Cups, that Japan are even going to be in the mention, in the mix, to compete against the greats. So my point behind that preamble is, quite frankly, you can only play and thus score against the opponents that you're allowed to play and thus score against. So Ohata gets there for me on my right wing. And I'm putting him against, with rather, his teammate and his peer and his compatriot, Hirotaki Onozawa, on the left wing. Again, fifth all-time top try scorer with 55 tries in 81 international games. Onozawa occasionally kind of fails to steal the limelight due to Ohata's successes that we've referenced. But, you know, that record is phenomenal. He scored 8 tries in his first 7 appearances for Japan, and again is fifth on the all-time top try scorer list internationally. So a great, great finisher as well. You may recall that he had a wonderful individual solo try against Wales in the 2007 Rugby World Cup. Wales, of course, eminently in the Big Eight, and that was a try for the ages. Another great finisher makes my back three complete. Loads of other greats you could have considered, but your thoughts on those two Japanese predators?
It's something, it's not my greatest of subjects, I suppose, Far East rugby, but we've seen what Japan can do magnificently out wide in the backs. Going back to your early point about Japan, it's if something is wrong or not being pushed forward successfully, it's always a management problem. Now, mm-hmm. Japan have had the right management. We take that nice Mr. Jones, for instance, who's done such a wonderful job here. He, I suppose, epitomized Japanese culture and Japanese fortitude when he led them to the win against South Africa a few years ago in the World Cup. And that's something which has really crystallized what's possible for Japan. I think that'll go on. And yes, I think those two are a wonderful choice on the wings.
I just love their brand of rugby. They just play with such elan. It almost conjures up memories for me of the kind of French teams of the 80s, 90s. And it's a throwback because we're living in an era of absolute behemoths in rugby union. There's no getting away from that. These guys are full-time pros. They're in the gym. They're absolute monsters. And some of the athleticism, accordingly, is off the charts. But the way the Japanese kind of seek the gap, support the man, offload. And again, that saw them not just get great fan support and great organization in their Rugby World Cup, but also great successes building upon that epic victory, which genuinely did shake up the sporting world when South Africa was shocked in the previous World Cup. So I really rather hope, talking about management, that they are well managed from the international perspective and allowed an opportunity to truly grow on and thrive. But right now, Brian, I'm excited to hear who you are introducing from the pack. Of course, both you and I, lifetime paid-up members of the Front Row Union. So quite whilst I'm picking the backs, I tell you, I'm ill-qualified to do that. But you are eminently qualified to give us your pack. Where are you starting, Brian?
Well, we'll start with the front row because that's what I understand most of, same as yourself, sir. In the total pack, just a couple of caveats here. There are a couple of surprises. I've even gone for a barbarian theme. We have an uncapped player.
Love it, Brian. I absolutely love that. Because I tell you what, just quickly, when you hear barbarians, you think rugby union, don't you? I mean, that's try 71 and all that. You know what? Interestingly, just quickly, before we begin, again, probing into your pack here from our non-top-tier international team, that try, I was watching it the other day. And I tell you what, I don't think it'd be allowed in modern rugby. I think I saw at least two high tackles. I'm fairly sure the final pass, which the legendary Gareth Edwards picked up at pace, finished with aplomb, was a touch forward. I don't want to hyper-romanticise, but I've got to tell you, you know, the barbarians are such a phenomenon. I'm glad there's still a place for them in our modern world. But just ever so quickly, Brian, your memories of that epic try that I'm alluding to.
It was a wonderful start, as the late, great Cliff Morgan said in his commentary. The high tackle would not have been around. It would almost certainly have been a red card these days. And I fully agree with that. You shouldn't go for somebody's head, whatever age you're in. And I remember people targeting exactly that sort of thing back in early playing days, not so much in the later ones. Nobody has really definitively said that the pass to Gareth Edwards, which he intercepted, by the way, it wasn't meant for him, was forward. It was a dramatic start. It was a wonderful thing. One overview on the game, the way that the game has developed in terms of technicalities. Mm-hmm. It was billed as the best game there's ever been for years and years after the recording. And you watch it these days and it's inspiring. People like David Ducking flying all over the field. However, if you look at it now with the viewpoint of a modern coach, at any club, if your third team handled that poorly these days, you would fire the lot of them.
Yes.
And that's what's happened with rugby these days. It's a lot cleaner. It's clinical. It's still got the same spirit. Athleticism is through the window. But these guys these days are paid. And they dedicate their lives to it. And that's been a huge difference to it. It's still a wonderful thing. I listen to it on an annual basis. It's absolutely marvellous.
You're right. Wonderful piece of commentary. And I tell you what, Brian, I think that's very important because there is sometimes a danger in us all to hyper-romanticise the past and kind of put it on a pedestal and accordingly lose sight of just how fortunate we are with the progress that has been made in all kinds of things. So I really appreciate that bit of analysis, but it is one of the greatest, most iconic moments in all sport. Wonderful piece of commentary, wonderful finish, great start from Bennett sidestepping and what have you. And I love, though, that the reason we have this conversation is because one of your players that we're going to hear from momentarily or a bit later on is uncapped. But right now, Mr. a lifetime member of the Front Row Union, as we both are. Brian, who makes your 1, 2, 3?
We'll start with number one. And from Georgia, you have the great Vasil Kakovin, the youngest ever prop on debut. He was 18. He was with Brive from 2010 to 12. He's with Stade Francais still. Vasil goes 115 kilograms. And it doesn't matter what I say about him. Let's quote a famous French prop, the greatest French prop, Sylvain Marconnet. And as a 19-year-old, Kakovin destroyed him. Marconnet described Kakovin as a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not a huge man. He's 115 kilograms, which these days is not the biggest for a tight head, but he's got the experience. He's still there, and he's certainly got the attitude. And he gets my number one vote.
Love it. And I tell you what, again, sometimes when we have these kind of conversations, you know, pundits as we are, we can have our opinions. And I know listening and you've got yours. Remember to keep tweeting us at Verulam Sports. But when you hear it framed by an all-time great, your ears prick up and you go, my word, that's a man who knows what he's talking about when it comes to scrummaging and front row play. And to have that high praise heaped upon him at such a young age just gives an idea. And I tell you what, talking about Japan in the preamble and as we've done it with my back three, I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful that Georgia will be given a chance to step up. They're beating everybody that they play at their current level. And again, that's all one can do. That's all one can ever do. I think they need to have an opportunity to step it up. I think that really had ought to be almost two tiers to the Six Nations. We'll see how that evolves. But I've got to tell you, Brian, I love that. I love that shout. Who's up next in your big three?
Well, obviously, at number two, one always considers the great Mendez of Argentina.
Yeah.
In this case, however, I've gone for a mixture of strength, speed, athleticism, and ball-carrying skill. So we've again gone to Japan, and the hooker I've chosen is Shota Hori. Now, at 16 foot 5, he's only a couple of inches taller than me, which makes him a little better than a midget, I suppose. But, 16 foot 5, that's interesting. 16 stone 5, to use the non-metric terms. He's still playing for the Panasonic Wild Knights. He has had 61 caps for Japan, so he's got all of the experience in the world. And he's also typical of so much of Japanese rugby. He can play also in the back row if required to do so. So that gives an indication of his speed, his tackling ability, his game reading, and his handling. Absolutely wonderful. Shota Hori gets it for me.
I really like that. And again, he's one of the key men for this resurgent Japan team and rugby culture that's being built. And as you say, not necessarily one of the behemoths that we've alluded to in our modern era. But I tell you what, you introduced it with Mendez. Maybe this is me doing precisely what I said we had ought not to do and being a little bit hyper-romantic about the past. But I just think, again, what that young bull was capable of with no fear, his a remarkable ability to transition throughout the front row, played at prop, both props, and indeed was a hooker. He had great success with Bath. I just think Mendez is one of the most iconic names in international rugby. And again, his ability to transition throughout the front row, which anybody who's ever packed down at any level will tell you, it's, there's such nuanced different positions to be able to play internationally across loose, tight, and indeed down the middle at hooker. Astonishing. Plus, I would argue in the era of, non-jumping, that he then obviously latterly was in, non-lifting, his line-out throwing was also maybe more of an art, perhaps, than it is these days. For me, Mendez gets the shout, but that's just me perhaps doing, again, precisely what we really have agreed is not necessarily the best thing to do and kind of hyper-romanticize the past. But what can I tell you, Brian? In the now, Shota Hori is certainly a star, and one of the quality aspects of this quality Japanese team is their speed at the breakdown, and he beats many a back row player to that and does the business. So whilst I'd go Mendez, I can't fault you. Who completes your front row?
Got some fun with this one. From Fiji, we have Bill Kavubati. Now, Bill is still playing for Marist, and Marist in New Zealand have a whole string of All Blacks to their credit. In fact, Kavubati is a Wellington player. He was there for many, many years. He has the distinction, if that's what it is, of being the heaviest ever capped forward. He's 6 foot 2.5 inches and 167 kilograms. That's 26 stone. Now, he had 38 caps between 95 and 2005. It's just something which, there's something of the romance in a yes. medieval thing about the front row. And when you face a prop of that magnitude physically, you know exactly what it does to your entrails. It makes you yes. think, oh my God, what's coming next? Kavubati has all the experience. He's got the strength. He's got the size. He's got the caps. He's still playing, bless him. He works as a doorman still in Wellington. A very, very, very popular man as well as everything else. They say the difference between the psyche of a loose head and a tight head, that a loose head is perhaps a more amiable type of a person. A tight head has something of the assassin.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure Bill would do that and do it with a smile on his face. And that's why he could afford to do that.
Ain't nobody messing with him on that door, I tell you. Goodness me, what a beast. We talk behemoths. I mean, he is the Goliath of all the behemoths, the heaviest international rugby player at this present moment in time. He's placing the record books, but make no doubt about it, he also had technique for a big man too. And a great, great scrummager, of course, he was. And, you know, again, not necessarily the world's most mobile athlete, but certainly knew how to shunt and make those hard yards too. Brian,
he so, made me feel happier playing alongside him, Tony.
Oh, goodness gracious me. You know, we're talking forces. That's your man, isn't it? And honestly, I love the shout. We're now shifting across to me, ill-equipped as I am, really, to define back play. But I've had some fun with my centres. I've ummed and ahmed about it. But I'll tell you what, the one man who was a constant for me was Brian Lima. 67 caps, 150 points, 31 tries, Western Samoa's all-time top scorer, Samoa as they now are. At 19, he became the youngest player at Rugby World Cup history. He'd go on to play in 5 Rugby World Cups. Samoa's all-time top try scorer, as I said, he is an IRB Hall of Famer, inducted in 2011. Now, we talk about enforcers just there with big old Bill, but Brian Lima richly earned the nickname the Chiropractor for his destructive, and I would say more often than not, even in our modern mode of defining the tackle, a fair but hard bone-crunching tackler, hence that nickname. He's my constant in my centres. And just briefly, your thoughts on the now head coach at Bristol.
A wonderful man, a leader, a tremendous attribute on television and radio, on the media. Great to talk to, hugely knowledgeable and a wealth of experience. You couldn't have chosen better, Tony. I think that's marvellous.
You might quibble my next centre, Brian. I just had to get him in there. I justified it to myself. I almost put him at fullback to sort of slightly try to hide him, but then I had to have Hernandez, as we discussed. But I've gone Serevi. I know he's really more of a sevens man, and I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I've never really understood the sevens well. Maybe that's a reflection of my front row union heritage. But I just love what Serevi is capable of on a rugby pitch. He, of course, was a bit of a globetrotter, played a little bit from my Leicester Tigers team. But he's just one of those mercurial players. And I figured if you've got the Chiropractor at 13, maybe he'll be able to look after Serevi, and Serevi doesn't necessarily have to get his shirt too dirty and just allow him to weave his particular brand of magic. Fijian legend, as I say, if you think sevens, even now, many will think and see that wonderful smile of Serevi as he goose steps like no other. I know that David Campese would have us believe that he invented the goose step. That's moot. But I tell you something, it was perfected with Serevi. He just really utilized that as an asset, and then that great acceleration, just an eye for the gap like nobody's business, just a sidestepping genius. Brian, you know, not necessarily the world's most complete center, not really even necessarily the world's greatest proponent of the 15-man version of rugby, but for sheer imagination, for sheer joy, and just for a unique ability, perhaps, I had to find a place for Serevi, and I justified it with the fact that the man, the Chiropractor, will look after him too.
Well, it's not only that. Can you? I think in pictures. It seems to work for me. Can I give you a picture? If you are the defence and you have Serevi and the two Japanese flyers coming at you, how are you going to feel?
A little bit worried, I'd say. A little bit like, well, do we pick our poison today? Who are we going for?
Yeah. And you literally don't know what's going to happen next. The Ella brothers, I saw the three of them pull off some magic. All three of them converged at top speed on the same spot. The entire defense plus their own their own teammates stood still because they knew something was going to happen, but nobody had any idea what. One of the Eller brothers, and I don't know to this day which one it was, ran off with the ball in a direction totally unfocused and unthought of. A try was scored. Now, I would have thought that Serevi and the two Japanese wingers would have exactly that sort of potential.
That's why he's in my 15. I just love him. 39 caps, 376 points. A globetrotter, a global star, and an all-time great, certainly from the Sevens perspective. I just love his imagination and that ability to, off the cuff, bit of a maverick. One of my all-time favourite players, even though I've never really fully understood the shortened version of our wonderful game of rugby union. Right now, moving back into the pack. Are you going down the second row, the lock route next?
It is the lock, yes, indeed. Now, traditionally, one would obviously look to provide a fair amount of grunt here, so one would look for size. I've tried to mix it up a bit. So at four, we're going back to Georgia for Mamuka Gorgodze. Now, anybody with a name like that, you're not intending to mess with, I wouldn't have thought. 118 kilograms, which means he's not an absolutely massive man. He was the Georgian captain for long enough, played for Montpellier, and he's gone on to Toulon. He's a barbarian. One of the reasons he's here for my money is that he also has the ability to play in the back row, so mm-hmm. He has the athleticism. He has the speed around the park, and he's got the tactical and technical abilities there. 71 caps for Mamuka between 2003 to 17, which makes him one of Georgia's most prolific caps.
Love the shout there. And again, an indicator of this up-and-coming rugby nation that is Georgia. Come on, IRB, if you're listening, give them a chance, give them a shout, give them an opportunity. They deserve it. They're banging on the door. They've been doing that for too long. Let's give them the key. And I know the key to this though discussion, actually to kick it off, was you, you wonderful listeners. I'm loving your work here to give us a chance to have this debate today. But I know you've got opinions. Who have we missed so far? Does Serevi make your 15, or is he just far too mercurial? What about those Japanese stars on the wings? Are they just doing it against the lower nations? Are there others we should have considered? Hey, get involved. Keep your views coming. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Love to hear from you always, because it's your show every bit as much as it is ours. But on our show today, Brian Quinn, who completes your second row?
Well, alongside Mamuka, we also have a national captain. This time we're heading deep west. We're going to the USA, and it's Ed Burlingham. Now, he captained the Eagles for 7 years against countries like Canada, England, South Africa, Japan, and Australia. So he's no stranger to the big occasion. Mm-hmm. Because the USA have not had the most prolific of fixture lists, he had 14 caps between 1980 and 87, always a captain, never obviously afraid of the big occasion. With the influence of gridiron football in the USA, again, you've got athleticism, you've got a tackle like an express train, mm-hmm. and you've got all-round ball-playing ability, and that includes in the lineout. So that's why Ed Burlingham partners Mamuka in the second row for me.
Really, really like that. I'm just going to make a quick general point here. Mentioned at the kind of beginning of this that I do feel as though, in terms of the need, for understandable reasons, for so many of the nations, the people and the individuals to ply their trade across the world, et cetera, the diaspora and what have you. But I think international rugby needs to do more for that. I'm a little disappointed with the USA though, because I think they're a unique case that doesn't quite fall into that category. The reason I'm a little disappointed is because I just think there is a synergy with rugby union as a sport, and as you say, gridiron. And I'm just a little bit disappointed that they've never yet embraced a rugby union, even though I thought it would appeal to their sporting psyche. I don't know what more we can do. I know they're very competitive again on the sevens scene. But just quickly, Brian, I wonder, are you likewise a little surprised that there hasn't yet been a buy-in to our great game from the USA?
It's taken a long time, but there again, rugby is a very strange thing to do in all respects. Money talks, and America mm-hmm. is certainly not short of that. Things are progressing, the East and West Coasts, Things are getting stronger, tougher. The USA now is far better led, because we started off this program by saying it's a management problem, or it's a management facility. I believe the USA is better led now, and I think we'll see great things of them in the next 10 years.
Here's hoping. I like that, Brian. Always gives us the roots of reasons to be optimistic, reasons to be cheerful. 1, 2, 3, America may be becoming a force in the game of rugby union. I'd love to see it. Anyway, moving now then to my halfback combination. I've gone at 10, fly half. Diego Dominguez, 2 caps for Argentina, but decided the opportunities there were limited. So he represented the land of his grandparents, Italy, many, many times, to such effect that we talk international top scorers from a try-scoring perspective. He is the 5th top point scorer, international rugby history, 1,010 points. Indeed, only one of 5 men all time to bust through 1,000 points in a career. That'll tell you something. Another man who's inducted in to the International Rugby Board's Hall of Fame. A great player, you know, not the biggest of men, but a leader of men. A great fulcrum, but just his poise as a kicker. You're talking assassins. He had ice running through those veins. Ice cool. Really classy guy, did great things again with Stade Francais. I remember him scoring, I think it was in excess of 20 points in a Heineken Cup final, but he wasn't the victorious team. The reason he wasn't was because I was actually in the stands that day with the family Rice, witnessing Leicester Tigers claim the Heineken Cup on that occasion. But Diego Dominguez was arguably man of that match. A great player, international great. Again, not necessarily there for fearsome tackling, but I'm sure your pack and a few others will ensure that he is well looked after and able to be the Iceman and kick those crucial points and facilitate what we've already discussed is a dynamic back lineup already. Brian, quickly, your thoughts on Diego Dominguez.
I'll be interested to see who you match him up with at 9. Dominguez, wonderful. Silky smooth skills, the heart of a lion, and it doesn't really matter what size you are. Distribution, tremendous. Always played with his head up and with a smile on his face.
Absolutely. That's what you want for your 10. You're interested to learn who my 9 is. I'm going to go for the man who's not in charge. I would have had him be, but that's by the by, of the international global scene. We've talked about how important this is, but he is very high up in the political arena of the international game, a man who understands global rugby inside and out, and a man who is, I would argue, in contention for the all-time number 9 in any rugby 15. I rate him that highly. I'm not saying he'd make it as my 9 in that team, but he'd be in the debate. I'm talking, of course, about the Argentinian great, Agustín Pichot. 71 caps for Argentina, 60 points. I mean, he could do it all. Great around the pitch. Again, real lion-hearted guy, not the world's most Herculean physically, but he was never afraid to put his body on the line for his team. But in terms of the skill set that you really want from your 9, great pass, great box kick. Also, I think even more supreme than his box kick was his grubber kicking ability, which always turned the 15. And that's what you want as a lifetime member of the front row union. Give me a line out going forwards. Give me a breather and get us back in this game. Go forwards, go forwards, go forwards. Pichot had that ability. A real general on the pitch. And another ability that he had. Brian, you might be able to educate me, but from my memory, I don't think I've seen a more artful proponent of integrating the scissor pass than Pichot, whereby he would move and lead with the body as if cutting an inside angle and then pivot and behind the back to a man who'd taken a different line, feed it with such flair and ease to move forwards. Great at that. He was great across the world, did good things with Richmond's, did great things with Bristol, is continuing to do great things in the political arena, but just one of rugby's all-time greats. As I say, I would put him in contention. I don't think he'd quite make it into my all-time top rugby union 15, but I'd want him in the mix in the debate. I do rate him that highly. Brian, quickly, your take on my man, Augustine.
Augustine is wonderful. He's still wonderful, as you said, in a management capacity. He, for my money, and with regard to the scissors or reverse pass, if you've seen Edwards and John in full flight, then that gives one pause for thought. A wonderful number nine, great hands, again, play with his head up all the time, and he's got his mate at number 10, so what could be better?
Absolutely. But again, I rate him massively highly. But I'm excited now to complete our 15. We are going back to the back row. Brian, who is your 6, 7, 8?
Right. I've had some fun with this. I hope you regard it as fun. But at number 6, there's no fun at all because there's no competition whatsoever anywhere in the world for this particular slot. Number 6 is Namibia's Jacques Berger.
Mm-hmm.
There is no contest for this position. 41 caps between 2004 and 2015. Probably the toughest tackler ever. He came back from terrible injuries to the leg, to have his leg rebuilt. I think 3 times he thought his career was absolutely down the Swanee, but he's back there again and absolutely amazing with the strength of character and the fortitude and just the plain strength of the man. Nobody wanted to be in possession of the ball if you weren't wearing the same colored jersey as Jacques. It just wasn't a safe thing to happen. His reputation is all over the world, known like many players are who are up there as just plain Jacques.
Tell you what, when you're just known as one name in any walk of life, you've done something quite special, and you've really made that clear. As I say, I love the fortitude to bounce back from injury. And you know what, Brian? It's such a crucial position, number 6. I was having this conversation. We were talking unsung sporting heroes in the previous podcast, and I put Richard Hill in that mix. World Cup win, of course, from England. Sometimes you don't notice a 6, but you do feel their work. And goodness me, I think many, many players from around the global scene have felt the fearsome hit of Jacques Berger. Great shout. Who comes in at open side?
Well, here's part of the fun. At open side, we have Javier Bardem. I pause for a moment to see if the name means anything. Javier Bardem won just one cap, and that was for Spain. Javier Bardem is married to Penelope Cruz, and he was famously the crazed hitman in No Country for Old Men.
Well, there
now, I have him there to provide threat, because with Mr. Berger looking after the rest of the defence, Mr. Bardem could deal with the threat version. And if I met him on the field, I would probably ask him very politely when exactly I should move aside to let him score.
Absolutely fabulous.
He was a genuine cap forward. He played for Spain. He had one cap for Spain. He did actually ultimately move to prop forward. But in our scheme of things, he is my number 7 for the day.
Do you know, I really like that because it's just a little bit different, Brian. And I've got to tell you, it's a name that I've never encountered. So you've educated me. And Mr. Penelope Cruz, I'm telling you what, if she wants to come watch our team play, I won't say no. So there we go. Okay. Now, I'm going to have to take a seat for this, Brian, because if it is the case that Baden got the one cap, that means your number 8 is the Barbarian Styley uncapped wonder, is it not?
Yes, it is. That's exactly right. Shall we launch into them?
Well, I've got to I'm taking a seat for this one because I'm fascinated. But I've got to ask, and I can't wait for you to explain this person to us. It's been I feel like we've ended this at the perfect moment, or building up to the end anyway. No place then, it would seem, patently not, for one of the all-time greats in Parisi, Italy's most capped player all-time, the 3rd most capped player all-time, and one of the finest 8s I've ever witnessed. So I'm fascinated, Brian, to hear who usurps him in your pack.
The man's name is Colin Johnson. Colin Johnson is a Bishop Stortford stalwart. He had the distinction of playing 25 years in the Bishop Stortford pack. And Colin Johnson had one appearance for the Barbarians in the Mobs Memorial match. Now, this is something like 25 years ago when Ben Clark was striding his stuff around the fields of the world.
Yep.
Ben Clark, obviously also from Stortford, as was Clarkey's dad.
Interesting. Now,
Clarkey's dad and Johnson were mates, and they taught Ben Clark a lot about things in his early days. Now, to move forward a bit to about 25 years ago, Ben Clark was asked by the Barbarians, will you please come and play in the Mobs Memorial match?
Mm.
And Clarkey said, yeah, I'll do that, so long as you select my mate, CJ. And they said, what's a CJ? and he said, well, he's my mate from Bishop Stortford. Really, they said. Does he actually play rugby? He said, oh, yes. Yes, he does. He's been there an awful long time. So the selectors actually agreed to it. And they sent out an invite. Can you imagine it, having played second string rugby for all that time?
Brian, this is why we love rugby. Truly it is. Honestly, this is one of the finest tales I've heard in a long time. Not only can I believe it, it makes sense to me, because this is what the rugby community, we talk spirit of rugby, you've encapsulated it in this tale. And as great as Parisi is, goodness me, I'm delighted that we've got Colin Johnson, CJ as he's going to be known from here on in, into your all-time 15. Goodness me, has he still got, he must have somewhere in his house the famous Bar jersey framed, I would hope.
Yeah, you've got the jersey, you've got the tie and everything like that. Colin Johnson, the story isn't quite over, because Colin Johnson got the invite and he thought it was a joke from his mate at the club. So he went down and told him, you know, I got this. Which one of you swine sent this to me?
It was only when
Clarkey took him aside and said, actually, it's real, mate. We've got a month to go. So Colin Johnson started training every day. He was a very fit man anyway.
Yeah.
But he started training every day and he went. He turned out at Leicester. For the, there was a knot of Bishop Stortford supporters deep up in the stands, and you could hear when the name was read out, CJ, there was a faint way from up there.
Brian, you've made my day. This is truly marvelous.
It gets better, because Colin Johnson scored the first try.
Oh, he didn't.
He did.
Oh, goodness. For the Barbarian.
They got properly walloped by Leicester, but but he scored the first try, and the grin, like the Cheshire Cat, is still there in the air. And that's all those years ago.
Well, goodness me, he's got a little piece of folklore history there. You can't ever take that away from him. And I tell you what, I can imagine many a bar in many a land as he's travelled his own rugby odyssey, he's probably regaling people with that tale. And why not, sir? You deserve
one of the men. One of the men who played in that match with him was the prop, Graham Rowntree. Of course, we know
Wiggy.
Yeah. And Mr. Rowntree took a dislike to his mate, who was the opposite hooker. So he was binding at 90 degrees to the rest of the strum to try and kill his mate. This upset Colin Johnson that day, because Colin was at second row for that particular match. And he tapped Mr. Rowntree on the shoulder. He said, excuse me, Mr. Rowntree, it's just, if you bind out there, I've got nothing to push against. And Graham said to him, son, when I want you to push, I'll tell you.
Brilliant. Brian Quinn, this tale has truly made my day, because, you know, sometimes every now and again, I love the game of rugby, will do till my dying day. But sometimes with the politics of it and this and that, I do find myself thinking to myself, come on, world, let's improve. But then when we break it down, we come back to these tales that are true. It is a true encapsulation of the real ethos, the real spirit of the game. And I love this. And as much as I love Parise, I think he could make any all-time 15 at number 8. Step aside, sir, because CJ, you're welcome in to our all-time non-top tier 15. Just quickly, final thoughts on not CJ, but his mate, Ben Clark. Great player, did great things with Bath. Would you say Clark was a better six? Because I really hated being a little bit of short stature. The era of that sort of mid to late 90s, whereby it seemed that bigger was better always. And Neil Back couldn't get a look in at seven. And Clark's great, but for me, Clark's a six. I know there was also Rodbov doing the scene well at that time. But for me, it was never quite an open side. Just quickly, your thoughts on Clark generally in that debate.
Clark, he's a lovely guy. Great to talk to. And when he's talking to you, there's nobody else in the room. It's just him. Now, the concentration extended to the field. Great skill. He came from, if you like, country rugby, Hertfordshire rugby. Mm-hmm. And that gave him the great stature that he had. He also did well later on for Richmond. Mm. And it was wonderful to see him there, which I had the pleasure of doing a number of times. But for England, he was well respected throughout the world, certainly in New Zealand, and you can't get better praise than that. Again, the management thing comes into it. England, for anything up to 40 years, were not led well from the top, and this translates obviously onto the field. There were times when they lost, I'm certain they lost the confidence of the players, who did more than go through the motions, but there's only certain things you can do. When you know that you're being encouraged and rewarded for doing the best that you can in the best possible company, that's when things start to improve. Clarkey was an integral part of that.
Absolutely. An all-time kind of class act, as you say, Brian. Really like that. I've got to tell you, I've thoroughly enjoyed our dissection of an all-time international non-top tier rugby union team. I love the fact that it's kind of culminated there with one completely out of left field, but who's truly reminded me, refreshed me in the spirit of rugby union, which I'm sure is going to set me up for a marvelous rest of the day. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. I want to thank you again for providing us with this topic of debate. Always get involved. Love your take on the CJ story. I'd love your take on who we've missed out. Could Parisi have made it even if we had to get a case for CJ? Again, any thoughts on all things sport? It's your show always, every bit as much as it is ours.